from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Journalism is a funny business. Print continues to fade, broadcast audiences fracture, and figuring out a successful business model has stumped most online news sites. But this just in, journalism startups are spreading faster than spilled ink. And some of journalism's brightest young stars, like Ezra Klein of The Washington Post, Nate Silver of The New York Times, and Jessica Lessen of The Wall Street Journal, are having a go at creating their own new ventures. We'll take a look at what's going on as journalism attempts to reinvent itself one more time. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Yesterday on Forum, we covered the Nigeria kidnapping story, a story that's been front and center across most online news sites, newspapers, and news broadcasts for weeks. But if you visited a couple of new journalism startups yesterday, you would have seen a somewhat different take on the story, one that represents a new breed of journalism startups. For example, if you went to a new venture called Vox, led by Ezra Klein, late of The Washington Post, you would have seen what looks like so many flashcards. Why were the 276 girls kidnapped, reads one. The answer you find below. How can they get away with it, reads another. A pithy three-paragraph answer follows. And on 538.com, you would have found a very different data-driven approach to the same story. Not surprising, given that 538 is the property of the data-driven guru, Nate Silver. A flurry of journalism startups have launched in recent months, often led by young journalists who've developed big followings at legacy journalism institutions. Klein at the Post, Silver at the New York Times, Jessica Lessen of the Wall Street Journal, who recently launched a subscription-based site covering the tech world called The Information. In this hour forum, we want to get what's at these new ventures, what's behind them, what is it that they offer, and of course, whether or not they can succeed. Joining us for that conversation, Jessica Lessen, founder and editor-in-chief of The Information, a subscription-only media site covering tech news. She previously covered the tech industry for The Wall Street Journal for 8 years. Jessica Lessen, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you join us. Joining us as well is Jay Rosen, a press critic and editor of PressThink.org, and of course also a journalism professor at NYU. Jay, good morning. Great to have you on our program.
Good morning, Dave. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us is Ken Doctor, who is a news industry analyst for Outsell. Outsell, a global research and advisory firm, and author of Newsonomics, 12 New Trends That Will Shape the News You Get. Ken Doctor, good morning as well.
Good morning to you.
Happy to have all you join us. It's a fascinating, fascinating topic, I think. And Jay, let me start by just asking you what it is that many of these new efforts have as a common denominator that allows them, or will hopefully allow them, to do something that legacy journalism institutions currently are not?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I've asked myself that as I've watched them unfold. And for me, the answer is that it goes back to when web journalism was originally born online, around 95, 96. Most of the media at that time saw it originally as a way to repurpose content online and take what they had already done for another platform and put it on the web. And because of that original mistake, as it were, even though it was rational at the time, others have been able to come along and say, not how to do new media with a legacy media organization, but starting in a different place, which is, what does the web allow? What is the web good at? And so what we find is new companies arise when people start over, and instead of trying to extend what journalism is now into a new platform, they begin with properties of the new platform that have been underdeveloped, and they try to build from there. And I think that's just the common element in all of the sites you mentioned.
Jay Rosen at NYU, also an advisor with First Look Media, which is another one of these new journalism startups that's just getting going. What would you add to that, Ken Doctor, about what the web allows that people are really, in some ways, first really fully being able to utilize? You've made the point that, in part, this is just about the ability to continuously update. The art of the link, I think, is the phrase that you use. Tell us a little bit more about what some of these new sites are doing
Sure.
along those lines.
Yeah, it is a fascinating phenomenon, and I think part of this is the fact of an up economy. We're seeing a lot more investment overall in new sites. These sites we're mentioning and a bunch of others, I recently did a count, and more than $500 million going into news or newsy content. But I think in addition to Jay's points, I'd say this is a generational change. And it's a generational change both in terms of age, as you pointed out, the relative youth of Ezra Klein, Nate Silver, and others. But it's also a generational change in tone and style. So if we look at all of these sites, they have what I call a casually serious take on the world. They're very serious about doing journalism, doing it right, getting to answers, including the information. But the tone is more blog-like overall. It varies, but more blog-like. It's more visual. One chart is worth a thousand words. And if you look at this is what we've learned in 20 years now on the internet, that you can communicate differently than the old AP inverted pyramid story and let readers in on what's really happening as you see it.
Hence the sort of note card, flashcard style of Vox, where a question is posed like, how are they getting away with this? And then you read the answer. It's sort of like news as Wikipedia in some ways.
Exactly. And they're trying to put themselves into a position of the reader. So often journalists, and I worked in newsrooms for a long time, they didn't think enough of the reader and the customer and say, well, what does the reader care about this story? And that's what Vox is doing in that format, is anticipating those questions and trying to answer them head on rather than writing an article.
Jessica Lesson, founder and editor-in-chief at The Information. That's also true of what you're doing, but in a different way, because what you're trying to do is provide sort of the news people can use, to use an old promotional phrase that floated around many newsrooms years ago, but for a very specific audience. Describe what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. So we are a high-value subscription site for professionals who want to go deeper into the tech industry. They maybe read the headlines and they see the news of the day and they catch the scooplets, but they want to know what's going on inside Google that made them decide to get rid of Motorola now. They want to know, I hear about all these peer-to-peer lending companies, but is that changing the finance industry and do I need to be on guard of that? How do these companies work? What do we need to know that's around the corner? And we think that there's a huge audience for this type of content because tech is pretty much upending every area of business. So,
and why couldn't that reporting have been done when you were at the Wall Street Journal?
Well, I think the key for us, and this is something that I think Ken mentioned, which is very important, is knowing your audience and the conversational aspect but of knowing and communicating with a very specific audience. I think so many media brands today, whether the big publications or the tech sites and the upstarts, are trying to go for scale and volume and advertising revenue. And when you're trying to write to reach large number of people, that content is very valuable, but that content is a different type of content. It has to speak at a level where it can reach millions and millions of people. And those are very, very important businesses, but they're sort of different from the kind of business that has at its core, its audience, people who, I would say, professionals who care a lot about the tech industry. So most of our subscribers to date work in the tech industry.
In some ways, is it almost like an old-fashioned newsletter designed for the tech industry?
In many ways, yes, but I think in some key ways, no, because if you look at the past, you know, 10 years in sort of tech news coverage, we have seen very successful newsletters and products that were very niche. I think what's changed, though, is the audience for those products now is so much larger. Today, if you're an executive in the retail industry or the finance industry, you want to know what's going on in tech. You want to know who's chipping away at your business or looking around the corner. And so in some ways, in our focus, in being able to write for a certain type of audience, in being able to ask ourselves as reporters, what stories do those people want to read? And let's go out and unearth new information. There are a lot of similarities, but I think what's different is obviously the distribution. You know, though some of those old newsletters were literally mailed and FedExed around, but also the potential audience.
Jay Rosen, is the common thrust, though, of this, where Jessica Lessen's effort is tailored and designed and focused on a very specific sort of audience, is the key factor here that goes across some of these other sites, the idea of we're going to help people get what they want to make them smarter, not just barrage them with updates on things they don't give a damn about, so that they're getting what they want in a very particular way?
I think it goes beyond that. It's most of these sites are starting with a goal expressed as public understanding. They're trying to not just add information, but make sure that people understand. And if you start there, that your product is really the ability of your audience to understand the news, then you produce a flow of news in a different way. And I think each one of these startups solves it like a different problem. Ezra Klein's 538 and his colleagues are trying to solve this problem of
we barrage you with updates,
but we don't give you the background. Nate Silver believes that when journalists get into generalization, trying to draw conclusions and also make predictions, they are very bad at doing that. So he's going to try and improve the way they do that. Jessica's outfit is zeroing in on the fact that 10% of the big mass audience is very, very deeply interested in technology news, and mass media mentality doesn't quite grasp that. So each one solves a different problem.
And Ken Doctor, then, some of this then is changing in a way the way we think about news, that what counts isn't just news or what's new, what counts is understanding that. And so if you use the Vox example of the flashcards I was describing, yeah, it's giving us not just necessarily the latest on what's happening in Nigeria, it's giving us some sense of what's going on and why.
Yeah, and I think that's very much, again, this kind of maturation of the readers, us, and of the media. It used to be, it's hard to remember, but 20 years ago, if you want to know what was going on here in San Francisco, you'd probably say, well, I read the Chronicle, or I read the Examiner, or maybe I listen to All News Station. That's how I got the news. So now the news is ubiquitous, and the facts are essentially commodities out there. And if they are, and if we all can know the same thing very, very quickly through literally hundreds of outlets, then we go to that next question of, well, what sense can we make of this? And this is an opening. We could argue that 20 years ago we needed this, but the structure, the economic structure, didn't support it. So what I find interesting, in addition to the concepts we're talking about, is how, in a sense, ridiculously cheap it is to be able to start one of these sites. $5, $3, $5, $10 million, you can start a national site, especially if you have a high social profile, as many of the leaders of the sites do. And that is very different than the old newspaper business, where only one out of every $8 goes into creating content and paying journalists. In these new enterprises, it's 60%, 70%, 80%, because, as Jessica pointed out, you don't have the physical costs of, say, a distribution of a newsletter or a newspaper or the creation of a television station.
So let's talk about the ways in which these ventures can be self-sustaining and succeed, and the way in which these different business models work. In your case, Jessica Lessen, you're offering a subscription service, $399 a year, And that means, and you have five journalists, is that right, who are part of the staff?
We have about, we have a team of eight, and about six of us are touching editorial.
But if you kind of do the math on this, mm-hmm. you can pretty quickly get to the idea that if you have a couple thousand subscribers, you're doing okay. And if you do more than that, you're starting to make real life actual money.
Yeah. I mean, the economics are pretty wonderful, just in the sense of being able to build a sustainable business. Now, our goal at The Information isn't, you know, just to make money. It's to really be a next generation leading news source that's around for many, many decades. But the economics work. And the reason that we are a subscription publication is actually first and foremost because of the kind of content it requires us to create. So if you're a subscription publication, you by definition have to write articles that deliver value above and beyond what's available for free. So the primary reason is an editorial mission and an editorial focus. That said, we want to be around. We want to be hiring the best journalists for years to come. We want to be the best place to work.
But you can be sort of small and lean.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't need – I mean,
absolutely.
If you – by growth, you might maybe get to 15.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've hired our editorial team includes another reporter from the Wall Street Journal, a managing editor from Reuters, reporters from Fortune, reporters who are at New York Times. So we have killer journalists, and we're going to continue to hire those people, but we don't need a newsroom the size of the Wall Street Journal.
So Jay Rosen, weigh in on this, if you would please, about whether that sort of model, the subscription model that Jessica Lessen describes, is one that other journalism startups could take up as well, or is it only going to work because of the very nature of the content that she's delivering?
It is one others could follow, I think, to sustainability, but that doesn't mean there is an unlimited number of opportunities like that. There's probably a very limited number, and it's not going to be a model that the journalism world can itself rely on. And the internet has broke the one business model, and now I think we're going to see many flourish at once. Jessica, I think, has really figured a good one out, and it will be tried by others, but I think we're going to have many ruling states instead of one big business model in the future.
Describe,
but that's not a bad thing necessarily. It's in many ways it's a good thing.
Describe yours, Jay. You serve as an advisor to First Look Media, which is the creation of Piero Mondiar, of eBay fame. And it has a different approach, which is there's going to be sort of a for-profit tech business, creating tech materials, and a nonprofit journalism side. Describe it.
Well, what Piero Mondiar said so far is that giving birth to First Look means starting three or four different things at once. One is a general interest news site that would be nonprofit and run under a home brand like First Look brand. And serve the audience for news. At the same time, there would be a for-profit technology company inventing products not just for First Look journalists to use, but for the news industry as a whole, a profit-making operation. The news would be a nonprofit, and it would include a third wing, which is a network of independent sites that is sort of do what Jessica is doing in serving an highly specialized, or not specialized, but intensified interest group in different ways. And so First Look hopes to combine the benefits of the entrepreneurial-driven sites that are built around the successful journalism and online following of one or two people, and then also have its own newsroom that is tech-aware, that is fed by a technology company that's kind of on top of that puzzle, and put them all together, and then you have a different kind of news organization. But nobody knows if it's going to work. We don't know if it's going to work, you know. So that's why we need these different models, because we don't know what is going to replace the model that the internet broke.
What do you make of what's the sustainability of these different things, Ken Doctor, including those efforts like the Center for Investigative Reporting or ProPublica that have some foundation money behind them. What's your view? Is it, as Jay says, let a thousand flowers bloom here and we'll see what happens? Are there ones that you think have a better shot than others?
Yeah, there are. And it's probably, to Jay's point, it's probably a few dozen flowers blooming at this point. And importantly, we need to make the distinction that almost all of these are national and globally oriented sites. The local journalism problem in the Bay Area and around the country remains. But in terms of sustainability, if you look like at a CIR, which produces top-rate journalism, it's still highly dependent on foundation funding. They're doing a number of things to wean themselves off foundation funding and making progress, but it's very slow. If you look at the various models out there, there are the pure reader models like Jessica's and Andrew Sullivan. And for if the content can be good enough and the audience is niched enough, it can work at that level of, you know, 6, 8, maybe 15 journalists, which could be enough. Now, for other companies, and I've written about Quartz, for instance, which is kind of a granddaddy of this now that it's 19 months old. And what they're finding is sponsor money. So really a new twist on advertising, but not the banner ads we don't like. Instead, giving voice, and this is really commercial storytelling, or they call it native advertising, to companies like Intel and Chevron and Charles Schwab. That is paying the freight for sites like Quartz, which is very good, and that's where Vox.com is intending to go as well. So you have that. You've got events. Physical events are a major part of a number of these new company strategies, and even research, taking the same kind of knowledge produced by the journalists and sharing it in an even nichier way with corporations. GigaOM, which is based in the Bay Area, is the leader in that area. So they're working four or five different spigots of money, and I think we're getting a fairly good idea of what will work to sustain it.
We want to add one other voice to our conversation now, and that's Felix Salmon, who's a former finance blogger, writer for Reuters, who recently joined Fusion, which is a cable satellite TV network co-owned by Disney, ABC, and Univision. Felix Salmon, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
One of the things you wrote that when you were going off to Fusion and leaving Reuters behind was that we were now entering a post-text world, which is both fascinating and scary to me. So describe what it is that you think you'll now be able to do that you couldn't do at Reuters.
It is both fascinating and scary. And to be clear, post-text does not mean that text is dead by any means. It just means that we are entering a world where the possibilities have expanded enormously from, you know, bloggers in their pajamas just writing things down and posting them to the internet, which turned out to be an incredibly powerful and interesting thing. But now, if you have companies with the resources that someone like Fusion has, you can start including not just videos, but animations, data visualizations, interactives. You can start telling stories in immersive and compelling ways that the bloggers of old could barely dream of. And, you know, these are the kind of things which require the sort of money that you need to put out a TV network. You know, it's not cheap, but we've managed to work out now, we have the technology now to be able to do whole new different types of storytelling for a whole new generation.
We have to take a short break. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes, Felix Salmon?
Sure.
Okay, because I'd love to come back and hear an example of what that is and the way in which you're now trying to tell stories that you couldn't at Reuters. We're talking about the new forms of new journalism startups, what they can offer, what the perils of that may be in terms of sustainability, but also what they can offer all of us in terms of getting a better understanding of what's going on in our world. We'd love to have you join our conversation and ask questions about this and tell us more about what your news diet has become. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us the old-fashioned way, or you can post your thoughts on our website or on our Facebook page as well. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, new journalism startups. Writers like Ezra Klein of The Washington Post, Nate Silver of The New York Times, Jessica Lessen of The Wall Street Journal have all become engaged in new journalism efforts. There are many others as well, including the project that Jay Rosen serves as an advisor on, First Look Media, and others as well, including what Felix Salmon is doing, one of our guests this morning, who left Reuters and joined Fusion. I know you're on a quick break from something you're at and can only join us for a few more minutes, but I'd love to get an example from you, Felix, of the kind of story that you think you can do now that you couldn't do at Reuters, and what that would actually look and feel like.
Well, I mean, I can basically just tell you you're going to have to wait and see. What I can say is that you don't need to tell anymore. You can show that this is the big difference, that in the kind of journalism that I've historically done, which is print journalism, text journalism, you just write things down and say, and then, you know, something grew from this number to that number, and a lot of people's eyes just kind of glaze over. But if you can show people how things look and feel, if you can take them on a journey which is visual and immersive and based in animations and data visualization and really make people understand on a much deeper level, on a much less sort of cerebral level, what you're talking about, you can make connections that were never possible in the past.
Felix Salmon, now at Fusion, formerly at Reuters. No, you have to leave us, but thanks for joining in and giving us your perspective on this topic.
Thank you.
So let's go around on this once as a question about what this will begin to look and feel and sound like, really. Jessica Lesson, first on the post-text world, because I think of what you're doing as still being sort of textual.
Yes, we love words and we write a lot of them. But I mean, I think there's a few things. One, you know, you visually we care a lot about photos and charts and making our content digestible. But I do think that if your value proposition is the quality of your information, what we find is that our readers really want that. They want it efficiently. One of the things that surprised me the most, actually, in launching at the beginning is we were sort of scarce on the news alerts we sent. We didn't email out every article we wrote. We only emailed a few. And by and large, subscribers flooded in and said, I'm not getting the emails. And I think this very much depends on your audience. But what surprised me is that even for a group of professionals, they like text. They want that full text in the email. They just don't want you to waste their time. So I really think it depends on the type of content.
And knowing your audience.
Absolutely.
Jay Rosen, on both those points, I mean, I have to say I ignore most of my news alerts that I get from, maybe I'm just not subscribed to the right ones, but I don't really care if I get, you know, when I get a news alert about, you know, there's just this car accident on I-80 or whatever. I mean, walk us through how you think people ought to do that so that they find an audience more. And then your thoughts also on this sort of post-text world.
Well, I think what these sites have in common, and Jessica just explained a good part of it, is they think of themselves as a service in which they keep people informed in a way that that user group wants. And that's what we mean by understanding your audience. It's not just who they are and like what their reading tastes are. It's how are they interacting with information so that they feel constantly informed. And by starting with the state you're trying to create in the users rather than the suite of products you have, you can start working on forms of news that work much better for those audiences. Hmm. That's how we improve things. And I think that's what's different about these sites. Is I'm trying to make this point three different ways because I think it's so essential. They start with different problems. It's how can we maintain the user's understanding in a way that they find valuable as against what should our flow of news products be?
You know, Jay, this reminds me of something that you and I used to talk about a decade or two ago, which probably not many people will remember, the trend known as public journalism or civic journalism. But in some ways, it's the same question, right? It's focusing on what the user needs.
Yes, and it's saying that it's the quality of your connection to your users that determines the quality of your product for the rest of the audience.
Jessica Lesson.
And just to say quickly, Jay, I mean, I think we have no choice but to do that too, in that our readers and subscribers are just flooded every day with information and digital distractions. And so if a media brand in news or any other category can't rise to that level of being indispensable value having that connection, it's going to be lost in the sea of other distractions. So I think it's not just the editorial mission, but really, you know, the sort of mandate of any media brand. You have to achieve that special connection, because if you can't be something people seek out or want, you'll just get lost.
I want to get to our calls, and there's lots of interesting calls and comments on this. But before I do, just a quick observation from you, Ken Doctor, on how can you achieve that connection on a bigger site, whether that's a Vox or a 538 or what will come on the Project J's advising through First Look Media. I mean, it seems tailor-made for what Jessica Lessen is doing, but can that kind of special connection between consumer and producer exist in a big way?
It can, and it does. And I think it's interesting. We haven't talked much about kind of old media and big media. But the same kind of things, the same kind of roiling we're seeing in the creation of this new media is happening in old media. So, for instance, the Wall Street Journal that Jessica came out of, has done a number of very good things with new media, but in and out over the last 10 years. But if you think about the kind of bond that the Wall Street Journal, for instance, has with its business readers for decades, that is, in a sense, mm-hmm. what these sites are trying to recreate in a more micro way. On email, for instance, the Journal has found that they send out, when there's a big news story, they send out 2.4 million emails. And they find that is the most effective way. So there, the experiments here are going on from small media that are starting out now in the last several months to big media. New York Times just started the Upshot, which is very similar in some ways to the kind of sites that we're talking about. So we're seeing all of that happening. And in this post-text world, it used to be, you know, you either wrote a story or you watched it on TV or you listened to it on radio. And I think the tablet is the device that has kind of opened up both the journalist's eyes and the publisher's eyes and the reader's eyes of, oh, I can hit the arrow button and listen or watch or read, and we're still just kind of fumbling in the darkness of figuring out which is the best way to tell a story.
Go to our callers next. Scott starts us out in Palo Alto. Scott, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Listen, I would not pay $399 for an all-you-can-eat subscription. For me, that's kind of an ownership model versus an access model. But if I was perusing the website and I saw a nice headline and I saw a brief synopsis of the article and I had access to the top commentary on your comment section, because much of the information I get is from those top comments that are kind of peer-reviewed and valued, then I would do more of a cafeteria buy, and I might buy one article at a higher rate than I would at a subscription rate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, interesting, Scott. Jessica Lessen.
Absolutely. Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling in. So stay tuned, but I mean, I think there are two things in there. One, commenting community feedback is a clear part of our value proposition. So far, we do that through a weekly newsletter column that has some discussion items and people chiming in on them. But it is something that we'll be investing in heavily going forward. And we think that the content on our – the value proposition of the information is our content, but also – the thoughts of our awesome subscribers. So I completely agree with you there. On the business model and on the subscription, I mean, we wanted to start in a very simple place and are thrilled that we did this way, because I think it's sort of exceeding our expectations. You know, I have mixed thoughts about the a la carte model, and there's been endless discussion around this in our business. My concern with it is that it has some incentives that distort the value proposition. In the same way that if you're going for page views, that means you sort of go for these blockbuster articles that generate a lot of traffic. If you were trying to maximize sales of one article, you might do that as well. Whereas I want our value proposition to be our articles consistently. So I think that there are some complications to the different models on the content, but I also strongly believe that over time we will have more options and that there's a lot of room to experiment here.
Scott, thanks for the call. Jay Rosen, just quickly add in, if you would, if a way in which you could imagine the cafeteria approach working. I'm thinking of sports, for example, where I'm passionate about college basketball. I don't give a damn about hockey. So I might be willing to sort of pony up for one but not the other. Does that make sense? Are there ways in which the cafeteria model could play out?
Well, I think you have to go back to the original problem that these services solve, which is that a portion of the audience always had a much deeper interest in certain kinds of news than the news media of the day catered to. And now we're seeing that the intensity of interest is aggregatable so that you can base news organizations around it, which wouldn't have been possible in the age of broadcast and print media. So what we're doing is capturing the value of the whatever percent it is. I'm just using 10 as an easy way to visualize it. 10% of the audience, which is very interested, and you can build a business on that. That still leaves the problem of how the rest of the world finds out about this, but by making deals with a larger media, Jessica is beginning to solve that as well.
Yeah, and Ken Doctor, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I wanted to add, part of this is simply a money mechanics kind of issue. So if you look at this pay-per-view issue and this basic question of, well, will you pay a little for one article if it's the right article at the right time? Credit card processing fees have been a problem that have bedeviled that for 10 years. People have tried to figure it out. But, for instance, in the Netherlands, just 2 weeks ago, this site called Blendl just formed, and it has all the newspapers in the Netherlands, where they have about 16 million people in it, and you can buy any one article for somewhere between 10 cents and 35 cents. And what I really love about it is if you don't like the article after you read it, you get a refund. So you may see something like that again now. There are a lot of these ideas that have been tried that haven't worked once or twice, but they come back. So we might have both a subscription and a pay-per-view or pay-per-article world.
And speaking of money, here's a comment from Joseph, who starts out by saying, here's my 2 cents. What I care about are two things. One, an informed, authoritative voice, and two, good writing and presentation. I love Nate Silver's 538 in the last election. He treated his audience like critically thinking people, and he explained electoral mathematics well in graphics and words. And it didn't hurt that, by and large, he was correct. I hope that in their eagerness to employ graphics and visuals, the new media doesn't assume that we can't read, that we don't appreciate a well-turned phrase, and that we don't notice poor grammar. When content creators don't use the tools of language well, they devalue the story they're using and the language to tell it. Ben adds, does your panel think that the reporters use their previous position to gain the contracts they're using now? If so, that model works for them now, but can that be sustained in the future? That's an interesting question. I mean, because if you look at you, Jessica Lessen, who developed a big following on The Wall Street Journal, Ezra Klein, obviously the same deal at The Post, or Nate Silver at The Times. What's the star power factor?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I thought a lot about it because I thought if I can't write the kind of stories I want to write without the Wall Street Journal, I shouldn't be doing this. But it was my hypothesis that we could, and that the relationships we build as reporters, our insights, you know, those are relationships with individuals, and the days of, you know, the stories that get handed out to the big brands, you know, these days, they instantly become commoditized, and those days are kind of over because they're covered everywhere. So I'm happy to report that, in fact, it's been quite true, and I've found that I've been able to develop deeper relationships and have more access as an entrepreneur.
But that's also, again, in the very clearly and carefully and smart way in which you've defined your business. I guess I'm wondering if this expands out, Jay Rosen. Like, Glenn Greenwald is the star journalist that the project you're advising on, First Look Media, has taken on. Same question could apply, obviously, to Ezra Klein or Nate Silver. How important is that, and will that staying power continue if they no longer have their old platform?
Well, I think there are ways in which both systems can coexist and contribute to each other. It's like when one of these specialty sites has been following a story that suddenly is of interest to the whole, to everyone, they should be able to step out of their specialist world and explain to the larger audience why this is important. And I think if you think of a future network of news that way, where we have lots of these specialty sites that are serving smaller segments of the audience, but they are capable of going mainstream when necessary, then that could be a better system than the one we have now, which is so impoverished in so many ways.
Back to our calls. Lance joins us next in Berkeley. Or sorry, Lance, we'll get to you, I promise. Adrian is next in Oakland.
Yeah, my name is Adrian. We have a small startup in Oakland called Beacon, where we actually help fund journalists where their readers pay a subscription, but they get access to all the journalists on the site who contribute to Beacon, but their money goes directly to support one of them. And my question is kind of like, you know, outside of what Jessica's doing, it seems like so much of stuff is focused on new formats and new ways to disseminate information, but so little of what's happening in the media world is focused on one of the core problems, which is that advertising hasn't seemed to really sustain or let media thrive for so many types of niche content, and actually just journalism in general over the last 20 years. So why are we always so focused on advertising as the future of all this?
Adrian, thanks. Well, Jessica Lessen's response is to not go in that direction, I think, and that's what the subscription model for her seems to work. But Ken Doctor, thoughts on that and the local problem in general? Adrian's
sure.
Speaking about his project Beacon Reader in Oakland, but there are lots of these. There's, you know, local media sites that are trying to make a go of this, but hard to find the means to support them.
Absolutely. This is a period where reader revenue is becoming much more important. So it used to be in the old days in newspapers, 80% of all the money coming in was from advertising, only 20% from readers, and the readers were really just there from a business point of view to read the ads. And so today, a paper like the New York Times or a company gets now 62% of its money from readers. It's a huge change, and either other dailies are getting up to 35, 40, 45%. So the readers' willingness to pay more for subscriptions, and they're paying a lot more for both print and digital subscriptions, is absolutely key, plus the other kind of models I talked about in terms of events and research, and other kinds of advertising. On the local level, the problem is one of scale. So the kind of sites we're talking about can have deep followings, but they're taking a sliver of a population. That is, if it's a national population, we're talking about 320 million people. We're talking about local, you can't find a sliver that's going to give you
yeah.
enough money. And that's the issue right now. And we need to find other kinds of funding, which are really combinations of funding, foundation and advertising and reader revenue. And for the most part, the local sites have done much better editorially than they have at applying business smarts to this next generation of local.
Well, let's hear from one more local site. And just briefly, if you would, Lance, on what you're seeing at your local effort, Berkeley side.
Sure. Thank you. Well, I agree with a lot of what Ken just said. What I would say, and maybe Berkeley is an exception because we have such an intense,
yeah.
interested news public here, that we're getting reader revenue. We encourage people to become members. We're very committed to events. We have an annual ideas festival that we run. But advertising remains very important for us. And I think one thing that is positive at the local level is that local merchants, you know, to reach their local community, sites like Berkeley Side or Newshawk in Santa Barbara, or there are a bunch in New Jersey that I know Jay is very familiar with. This is a principal platform for those advertisers to reach their audience. And in terms of the news, you know, we are providing news for our community when there was a void before. So it isn't that, you know, there was a legacy and you need to find a new thing. The ability to bootstrap these kinds of sites enables a news operation that, you know, is providing a level of coverage that I think in many of these communities never existed before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good luck with what you're trying to accomplish, Lance. Do you see examples, Jay Rosen, of where efforts like Lance's and others are being sustained?
Yes. One that I'm particularly interested in is unfolding in the Netherlands. It's called De Correspondent, and they raised a huge amount of money directly from readers for a site that would be based around star journalists doing their thing, and they seem to have made a go of it, and they're trying a lot of things that I think deserve to be tried as they operate on this relationship between what Ken was addressing in reader revenue, the kind of journalism that is responsive to readers, and ultimately one of the promises here is that if you have readers who are contributing more to sustaining the journalism, they're also more involved in it through social media and interactives. And ultimately, if they can contribute knowledge that they have to reporters and journalists, that's where I think the real gains for this model will be seen, is when my old friend Dan Gilmore's line, "The readers know more than I do," when that starts to become a dividend to the journalism the site is doing because of the intimacy of its bond with its users, then we're going to see this generation of journalists take off.
And that really, in some ways, brings us right back to the theory that's behind the information, which is all about sort of understanding your audience and having and building that close relationship.
Absolutely. And I don't think that's a niche thing. So we are certainly in a specific market. But one of the things that frustrates me about the discussion of media business models and news is we're sort of, after the fact, trying to throw spaghetti against the wall and say what will work. If you're building a business, from day one, you have to think about the value you're creating and what the audience is for it. And I think if we stop saying, here's what I want to do, okay, how can I support it, and start thinking, what can we build, whether it's in local or politics or tech, that will have value, and then think of all the different ways for that, I think we'll be much better off as an industry.
Jessica Lessen is founder and editor-in-chief of The Information, joining us along with Jay Rosen, PressThink.org, and also NYU journalism professor Ken Doctor at Outsell, a global research and advisory firm. As you know, this is a fundraising period on KQED Public Radio. If you'd like to support KQED, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Twitter question. What advice do you have for journalism students? That goes to you, Jay Rosen.
Are we on the air?
Yes, yes, indeed. We're continuing for those that listening on the Sirius satellite.
Oh, that's such a 2008 question. Well, you should definitely be on Twitter, but it's more important than that is you should have your own home online where I can find you, find your work, find out what you're interested in. And you should own your name online so that you're easily found that way. And many employers now, they don't want to see your resume. They just look at your online presence. So it doesn't mean that you have to invest all your energies here or there. It just means that you need a presence.
Jessica Lessen, what would you add in terms of those? You're not far removed from being an aspiring journalist, only 7-8 years into this business. What would you advise?
First of all, I'd advise awesome, and you've picked a great profession, and there's never a better time, which I strongly believe and preach everywhere I can. And actually, my advice would be that the point I just made, particularly if you're inclined to be entrepreneurial, as I know many are today, don't just start writing on a blog and think everyone will follow. Go out there and find something that you think there's a real market for, and think about the sort of go-to-market strategy for your articles as well, because all great journalists want to be read, and we can be read by a lot of people today, but you can't just throw it up out there. You really have to start focused, and if it works, you can get big.
But on the other hand, Ken Doctor, could Jessica Lessen, Ezra Klein, Nate Silver et al. Do what they're doing now if they hadn't done what they'd already done at legacy institutions?
Largely not at this point. I mean, both in the basis of experience and knowledge, and the knowledge I would add to the student question of get good at something. Because this is not a world that many of us grew up in of generalists. This is a world of specialists, and so you need to get good at something. And you can say it no longer takes 15, 20 years to get good. Ezra Klein left the Washington Post when he was 29. So I think that's an important consideration as we go forward.
Someone wants to pick up on our discussion earlier about the post-text question and making news more consumable using various graphic devices and so forth. Could you please discuss the decline of quality journalism in the face of just flashy, empty calories? Are your guests just putting lipstick on a pig? Jay Rosen?
You're a fashion advisor, Jay.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything that comes along can be overused and overhyped, and if you're really committed to improving journalism, you don't get too excited either way. You don't consider these improvements to be like the future of journalism. And surely they can be done stupidly, and there's nothing magic about a chart, and data itself isn't going to save anyone. And like, it's a little tiresome, frankly. We're getting better at informing people because we have more powerful tools to do it. And many of them disrupt the ways that journalism was done in the past. I'm sorry if that word is a cliche. It's too bad, because that's what happened. And so we make gradual improvements. What I think is interesting is, I'd love to know if Ken agrees with this, I think we just hit an innovation moment where things sped up in the digital world so fast that only some of the change could be contained within legacy media organizations, and the rest sort of burst out in this wave of startups we're talking about.
And let's let that be a last question for each of you to address. In some ways, what Jessica was saying as well about that this is a great moment to be a journalist because of this innovation moment. Ken Doctor first.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. And it's a flowering. There's a number of things that have come together. The technology that we said 10 years ago allows anybody to be a publisher, now we're really starting to understand what that means in these projects. So we've got technology, we've got money flowing in, we've got the confidence of younger journalists saying, I know how to do this, and I know how to satisfy an audience. You have all those things coming together. And it is fascinating that in pockets it's happening in the old media as well as the new media. So I'm optimistic about the next 3 years.
Jessica Lesson.
You know, I think it's certainly an exciting moment going on. I think it's easy to overplay it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we did talk about the innovation at big media companies, including the Journal, because I think that's part of what's going on. But if what you want to do is write great stories and have them be read and acted upon, you can do that in more places now, and that's what we're seeing.
Jessica Lesson, founder and editor-in-chief of The Information, thanks for being part of our program.
Thank you.
Jay Rosen, great to talk to you again. NYU journalism professor, pressthink.org. Jay, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
And Ken Doctor, news industry analyst for Outsell, a global research and advisory firm. Ken, thanks very much.
Very good. Good to be with you.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer, along with Tina Lorberg. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.